Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Rangers of the Dork Forest. It's me, Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. You can go to the websites, JackieCation.com and DorkForest.com. JackieCation.com has DorkForest.com. It has the audio links. It has the video links to my YouTube. It has all of my dates for stand-up comedy. It has all the merch. It's got Dork Forest merch and stand-up merch and all of my CDs and DVDs if you have those devices. Other things you can do, Bandcamp. There's a Bandcamp with the very old episodes. Some of them are free. And then there's a storytelling album that you can get on my Bandcamp. And I'm on Pandora and Spotify. It is 2025, and feel free to start donating to the Dork Forest. Yeah, cost me about 10 grand a year to put this up. If everybody donated $100 every year, if everybody just handed me $100 every time they saw me, or PayPal, Venmo, then I would have, I think, about 10 grand. I don't know, but I would have enough money to run this and probably buy myself lunch. And I'm a big fan of doing the show. I'll do it anyway. But if you have $100, send me $100. If you have $2, send me $2. You can do it monthly on PayPal. There's buttons all over my website. And my Venmo is just my name. No hyphen. Jackie Cation. I'm wearing a red shirt. Let's get into the show. Oh my God, Gordy is barking. Oh good, he stopped right when I brought it. Jackie Cation, Ranger of the Dork Forest. Rangers, we got another guest, another comedian who I worked with in Washington, D.C. at the D.C. Loft. Very funny. You should find her. You should hand her cash. You should do all those kinds of things. But she's on Instagram at Dale Dunlap, D.C. So D-A-L-E-D-U-N-L-A-P. D.C., as in Washington, D.C., our flawed but still standing national capital. So
for now, welcome to the show.
Yes. Hopefully until tomorrow. We're doing this day of. How's it going, Dale?
It's
welcome
going
to the show.
Well. Yeah. Thank you so much. Excited to be here. I was like I said earlier, I've never done a podcast before either. So my first one. I'm excited.
Oh, my God.
I've listened to this podcast in the past, so I'm excited to be on it.
Oh, there you go. That's perfect. Yeah. I'm going to let the other dog out so that he can also bark. That'll be fun for him.
All right.
Tyson?
Get out. Go on. Get.
Go, go. I know you're blind. I don't care.
And you got the little kitty behind you.
And then we got the cat behind me. I'm in the mama room. She passed away like 3 or 4 months ago. But
yeah, I remember you talking about that. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. So here we are, in the Dork Forest, which is a little sloppy this week, last minute. But you said that you used to bake.
I did. Yeah,
and was it a labor of love, and then it became a job, and then you had to go be done with it? What happened?
Sort of, yeah. I liked baking when I was a kid. A lot of people who become professionals in the kitchen, they talk about, oh, my mom used to make this and cook or whatever. And my parents didn't cook really. My dad baked on occasion. Yeah, my mom could drive through a McDonald's drive-through like nobody's business, but
she was amazing. Look at that. One hand on the wheel, one hand in the wallet.
You know
good
what
for
I mean?
You, lady. Yeah.
Give you some fries, you know? I mean, she was great. She's great and everything. It's just cooking was not her thing. So the very first job I ever had was at a bakery at a beach when I was like 15. You know, staying with my grandparents for the summer.
Okay.
And that was great. Did that a couple of summers. And then fast forward to, my mid-20s, and I'm trying to figure out what to do. And I was, I kind of didn't take things too seriously. I was kind of got into trouble when
shocking.
I was like a teenager.
Shocking. What? Stand-up comic about? Who has some sort of checkered past. We all have a checkered past, but it's not as checkered as we think it is. It's fine.
Right, that's so true.
You just don't know what you want to do. And so you're like, I guess I'll get a day job.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. And so, but my dad, he was very good about helping me try to like figure stuff out. And he pushed me to consider going to culinary school. He said, why don't you just give it a try? But I specifically went for pastry. So I didn't learn to cook on the hotline in school. I did eventually do that for a job, but that was sort of through the industry. Right. Okay. But yeah, so I went to school for pastry and that was pretty cool. And then I eventually did that for a living for a few years. And I loved doing that. Right. But yeah, I eventually, there's just kind of like a whole bunch of stuff kind of happened in my life and it just sort of became easier. Like I had to kind of sell out and get a bit grounded because it's like, you know, 60, 70 hours a week you're working.
Right, right. It's a grind. Yeah. It's like, and then you're up at the crack of dawn because everybody wants bread at 7.
Right. But I don't miss doing it professionally anymore. Okay. But I do appreciate the things that I learned.
Right. And, well, the crazy thing is so you go to culinary school. How long do you go to culinary school for pastry? Is it a 2-year program?
Well, if you go to like a degree granting culinary school, like the CIA or,
Culinary Institute of America. I know about that because my sister's always wanted to go as a hobbyist.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Culinary Institute of America. And then there's another one that I just forgot the name. It starts with a J, but it's another really well-known.
The Juilliard of Baking. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. So I went to one in Maryland called L'Académie de Cuisine. And it was, it only took about 6 months. Essentially you graduated a year later, but so it started in January and I believe we fully stopped maybe in summer, but basically it was, if I remember correctly, three sections,
like
three
semesters
courses. Right. Exactly. And so there's one very intensive, all classes. And then you had to find somewhere to do sort of your internship.
Right.
And then you had class and internship. And then the third was to just be doing it, you know, at the internship. And and the part of that was, the only rule was, don't quit and don't get fired.
Oh, there you go.
Because a lot of time that happens with people because it's just too much.
Well, and restaurant industry is incredibly intense.
Yeah.
And this is what I've heard. I don't know a lot about it, but I've seen a lot of Food Network. The kitchen can be bossy.
A little bit. A little bossy.
Sometimes there's like there's some personalities going on. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I was a dishwasher that was my first job, high school. Okay. And there was some bossiness, but I was the dishwasher. So I just sort of knew that I was pretty low on the totem pole. How about I just do the job?
Yeah, you can just do the job. I remember
I was
one
16,
of the things.
So
that's perfect. I did wash dishes a little bit at one place that I worked, but just to give the dishwashers vacation. It was like
you were covering for people.
Yeah, it was like a slow time. And one thing that I remember them teaching us in school, they took us over to the different dishwasher stations where the dishwashers were working. And they said, these people, when you go out in the work industry, you might think that people aren't respecting them. They said, these people are the lifeline of your kitchen.
Yes.
So respect them. And, you know, if they have like the dirty dishpan where you put the utensils, don't put a sharp knife in there, especially without telling them, because they reach in. If that person slices their hand, what are you going to do? Now you're going to have to wash your own dishes too, because they got to go home because they just sliced their hand open.
You have to value the people you work with, and certainly value, because I do think that dishwashers are not as it's funny because Andy, my husband, his first job was as a dishwasher as
really?
Well.
We've all had the same first job. That's cute.
Yeah. I worked in fast food. I did sort of just hot dogs and hamburgers and fried clams and fried fish and made tartar sauce. I know how to cook. Anyway, but I never baked. And so going, what was that first intensive, like the first class is essentially they're teaching you how to bake and then they're like, go get a job and bake. And then you'll really learn how to bake or how to use all these things that we taught you. Mm-hmm. How to do them quickly, how to do them efficiently.
Mm-hmm. What, with not a lot of space and things like that.
Oh, right, right, because there's no room. Mm-hmm. And so what do you think, so that first semester or that first class, what do you think you got most out of that?
The thing that I think that you get most out of that first class is that you're going to learn the foundation of how to make certain categories of everything. So it's not quite as overwhelming. You know, once you sort of learn the basics for this type of dough versus this type of batter versus this type of whatever, you know how to put things together. And
that's great, because it is freaks me out at the Great British Bake Off when they're
I still need to watch that, because I get overwhelmed with so many cooking shows, so I don't watch them, but everybody tells me that that's the one to watch because it's very relaxed sort of, and
and it's very supportive. This is a fun fact that I don't know if it's true, but I hope it's true. The original co-hosts, there's the judges and then there's the co-hosts, there's these two women who I believe were comics. And hosted the first like 10 years of it until they moved to a different BBC channel that they didn't like. Weird. Anyway, but they did this thing with these amateur bakers where if they were getting upset, they would go and stand next to them and swear, just start screaming swear words so they couldn't be filmed.
Oh, I did hear about that. Now that you mention it.
Right. And
that's so sweet.
It's super
sweet.
Yes.
I love that.
So there's, and I've had other people on the show tell me the difference between these different doughs and batters and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But on British Bake Off, they'll be like, make a shoe batter.
That's the first thing they taught us how to make.
It is.
Was shoe. Yeah. Because it's like, puff.
It's an eclair, right? Or
it's an eclair. It's also the same dough that you use for churros. It's the exact same thing.
Really?
You just drop it into a deep fryer instead. It's the same, exact same dough.
What is it?
Eggs and milk and flour.
Okay.
Hold on. It's been a while since I made, but yeah,
it might be salt.
You put probably a little bit of salt. You put milk and butter on the stove, and
the fact that it's muscle memory flour, at this point. Yes,
right. Yeah, and then you put flour in, and then you mix that on the stove, and you have to dry it out so you're until the flour and the milk and such gets kind of flaky. Okay. And then eventually you throw that in the mixer, and you slowly start to add eggs because it's very hot, right? So you don't want to just dump all the eggs in right at once or they'll scramble. So you start adding in the eggs until it gets to a certain consistency, and then you pipe it on.
Oh,
you know.
And then you pipe it. That's right. Cause shoe gets piped. Mm-hmm. I've seen that. It's so it's milk and flour or whatever, a very basic. And then you mix that over heat until it dries out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then you put it in the mixer and add the eggs after it cools for a hot sec.
Yeah, it's gonna be still. It will.
It's
cool.
Still warm.
It's still warm, but it cools off from being agitated and stuff. And
right. And then and then you add and then you pipe it.
Mm-hmm.
And what? There's no leavening agent. Why does it puff up? Is it the air?
I'm trying to remember why. because sometimes it is. Sometimes. It's just air, depending on the dough and what it...
Like, because you are folding it or you're putting air
right,
in it
but I'm
or
trying
something.
To remember why the air is so... Why it incorporates the way it does in shoe paste. Because it rises a little bit, but it's mostly that it's hollow, right? Like, after it's baked.
Yeah, because it bakes to be hollow, and then you poke a hole in it and fill it with, thank you very much, custard. Mm-hmm. So,
Also, Gruyères are the exact same thing. The little sort of cheese puff balls. So you can either pipe shoe paste and then you egg wash it, you bake it, and then you can turn them into cream puffs. Or after you've made the shoe paste, you can mix in a whole bunch of different shredded cheese and herbs.
Yeah.
Pipe it and then bake those.
Into the sort of into the dough itself. You put the cheese in the, and then you pipe it.
Mm-hmm. And you don't end up filling those. They end up dense enough with all the cheese that had been added.
Right. How were they different? Yeah.
I don't know. That I
you
don't
might
remember.
Know. You might remember. What is a scone dough? What kind of dough is that?
So scone is, I think that's considered a quick bread.
Puff pastry, rough puff.
Right.
Something like that.
Puff pastry is a layered sort of
situation with very cold butter and you're folding it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
this is the technical part of it, by the way. We will stop.
I should have studied before this, but we spoke last night and I wasn't fully prepared.
Right. And this is not the fun. It's supposed to be fun for you to talk about these
things.
That's
okay. So I do like talking about that. The only thing that I truly really remember technical stuff about, I mean, there's a few things, but mostly chocolate, because I loved learning about chocolate. So I remember all like scientific things about the tempering chocolate and things like that.
Yeah.
And I tend to lose people if I start talking about it.
Welcome to the Dork Forest, because now you've socially arrived. What is, I've never understood, like, I've seen them do it 100 times where they break up a candy bar and they stick it in the thing. Mm-hmm. And then how does it get shiny? Why is it shiny sometimes and not?
Right. So the reason it's shiny is because it's in temper. So if chocolate is shiny, if it's hard, like there's a snap to it when you break it, you can hold it without it immediately kind of like melting and sort of getting your fingerprint on it. It's in temper. If you watch a lot of things online where they're like, I'm going to make this cute little dessert and I'm going to make decorations and, you know, it's all fast forward and whatever.
Yeah.
It shows somebody melt some chocolate, pipe it into a shape. And then they instruct you to put it in the freezer for a minute and then take it out and they pop it on a cupcake and they're like, it's done. Look how perfect it is. It's only going to look like that for a little bit. And if you touch it, it's going to, cause it's not actually in temper. They just sort of froze it and put it on, or they use the melts that have some sort of soy emulsifier to sort of try to bring it together, as opposed to just so
if you just work with chocolate, there's a certain thing you have to do to make it stay.
Yeah. And so what you have to do is you have to, so once something breaks temper, this is the dorky part, right? So they're made up of these beta crystals. So just like a bunch of little, you know, microscopic little beta crystals that band together. And when they're all tightly band together, it's all in temper.
Okay.
And once it starts to melt at all, the chocolate, and chocolate melts at a temperature lower than your body temperature. So it's very easy to just hold chocolate and then it melts.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That's why M&Ms became so popular with it's the chocolate that melt in your mouth, not in your hand, or whatever, because they put the candy shell around it that's not chocolate to protect it. So once it starts to melt, the beta crystals start to splinter off. And once that happens, you have to reset the whole scientific thing. And that's when you have to do the steps, which is completely melt the entire thing down. You have to bring the temperature all the way up to a very specific range.
Okay.
And then to ensure that all of the beta crystals are now separated. Right?
Right. Oh, because you're rebuilding.
And also you have to be careful. Yes, exactly. Oh, and the other thing with chocolate is that it also burns extremely easily. It burns very, very easily. It takes practice, right? So you bring the temperature all the way up, separate all the beta crystals, and you've had to drop the temperature down, all the way back down, but not too far down, right? You don't want to freeze it.
Right.
But far down enough to where it's going to bring it all back together.
Oh,
and then bring it back up, but a little bit, and then hold it within this like 5 degree
this
range.
Okay.
And then
you can shape it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can shape it and you make curly cues or you can make a reindeer. Yep. And are you still putting them in the fridge?
It's best to not put chocolate in the fridge because it's humid and it can make it restrict and constrict and whatever. I realize how you're asking this question. You don't need to put it in the fridge at that point. No.
No.
You shape it how you want. You got to move kind of quickly because it'll start to set quickly.
Right.
And then you put it aside. Obviously, you don't want it to be a really warm place. Yeah.
Right. Try not to put it
nice
out in the
cool.
sun.
Yeah, but you store it.
You don't
it
put
in.
It back in the fridge.
Nope.
Right. Okay. So here we are, mm-hmm. almost 20 minutes in. Let me ask what your favorite desserts are to make, to eat, and to make with chocolate or not chocolate.
I like a lot of
Because
really,
you like desserts, right?
I do. I love them. When the first time I bonded with this other comic here, we were talking after a mic, and I don't know how we started talking about desserts, but we ended up talking about desserts for an hour, just sitting outside. Because I feel like a lot of times I come across people, they're like, I don't like sweets. And when he said that he liked desserts, we just started talking about our favorite desserts and just like, we have to go. You might,
that's Winston perfect.
Hodges, he's a very funny comic.
Okay,
here,
what's his name?
Winston Hodges.
All right.
Yeah.
Something to look forward to.
He's a big dessert person as well. Right. So,
baked desserts or candied desserts?
I lean towards baked good. So my favorite tends to be more cookies. I love baking them. I love eating them.
More so
all
than
different
pies or cakes or breads? Like banana
I'd say
bread?
It's close with. Oh, yeah. I mean, I like banana bread, but yeah, I like it more than that.
Andy does an amazing impression of a banana that has gone too far. And then he just goes, I want to be banana bread. And then he makes the banana duck. We're living a bucolic life anyway. Pastries is more than candies, cookies.
Yes. Yeah. I tend to be a little more on the cakey side of desserts. I love all of it. Candies, ice cream, everything, but I'm always going to reach for a cookie or a cake or a pastry or a pie. I love baking cookies. I like baking croissants. I like baking cakes.
What? Okay. Yeah. So let's talk cookies.
Okay.
Let's do it. What is your favorite cookie? That's actually an obnoxious question. What are some of the cookies that you like to eat and bake?
No,
and
that's
whatever?
Not obnoxious. No, I think, well, so there's two that tend to be my favorite. I always bake this one type of cookie. It's like a chocolate spiced cookie. It's a chocolate and it has sort of like smoky and spicy mixed in.
What's
with
in
cinnamon.
It?
It's cinnamon, ancho, chili powder, and cayenne.
Okay.
And
wow, that does have a kick.
It's fun. Yeah, I make that the most. One time I tried to, it wasn't bad. It just wasn't strong enough. But I had replaced, I replaced half the butter with bacon fat, and added chopped bacon into it as well. Because I also like chocolate and bacon together. It's
okay.
Fun.
Right.
And it was fine, but I don't know. I never really went back to tweak it.
Okay. So if you're making the only cookies I know how to make are Nestle Toll House on the back of the package.
That's a good recipe. The next thing I was going to say were chocolate chip cookies. And those were my dad's favorite. That was something that he made, chocolate chip cookies all
the
time.
So here's what I learned in the moment. By making a mistake, when one of the first things about recipes is you got to read the whole recipe. And so with chocolate chip cookies on the back of the chocolate chip package, I just put all the things in the order that they were listed, as opposed to mixing the dry and then mixing the wet and then combining. So it didn't work, but that's what you do. You mix all the dry stuff and then you mix all the wet stuff and then you put them together so that you get the right consistency. Mm-hmm. Is that true with the, how are the chocolate spice cookies?
It's interesting that, so this kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, which, you know, learning about the foundations of things. And yeah. So you're absolutely right. So with the cookie dough, the you usually cream the fat and the sugar, right? So, right. You know, butter and sugar, and then you add the wet and then you add the dry. So you're creaming the butter and the sugar, and then you're going to add, you know, any eggs that might be in it, any corn syrup or molasses or whatever you're okay. adding to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then after that, you're adding your, what you should have on the side mixed together, all your dry, your flour, your leavening agent, any spices that you added to it, whatever. And then add that into what's been already mixed together. And then you put the chunks, like the hard dry chocolate chips, nuts or whatever, put that in last.
Okay. Order of operation.
Right. But so when you've been doing it longer, it's interesting because you did still go about it the way professionals go about it. So another thing that we had to learn when we started working in the field, right, is when you ask your chef or whoever, hey, I need the recipe for this or that, they said they're not going to hold your hand and give you instructions. They're going to give you a list from top to bottom, and it's going to have the amount next to each item.
Okay.
And that's it. And you're going to be expected to know how to put it together without having instructions.
Oh.
And if you know how to make, okay, I'm making a cake, so I'm going to put this and this together, and then this and this together, and then this and this together. Usually people are nice enough, they're going to write it down in order of how you do it.
Right.
But at the very least, you should know how to put it together.
Okay. Right. So they give you all the information. They're just like, 2 cups of milk, a 4 cups of water. I mean, like the thing is if it's grouped into the way you're supposed to group the things and then put them together.
Yep.
That is interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. It's a, it makes sense after you do it for a while, right? You know, because also you're very busy. So you're just sort of, okay, here's the thing. And then you give it to somebody and that's, and then they get it and that's fine. But
right. And then it all works out.
Mm-hmm. What? But so cookies, I say, are my favorite. And I like making croissants. I like making croissants with people to show them that it's, because I think a lot of people are very intimidated by croissants.
Yeah.
And it's actually, it's only, you know, 4 ingredients and you're just, it's just time and a few steps, you know, that you got to.
Right. Okay. So before we go get into croissants, I would like to know how you make a chocolate spice cookie. Like, you're creaming the butter and sugar.
Yeah. So just butter and sugar and then egg, corn syrup. Sometimes I replace it with honey. I've replaced it with molasses before, but something like that.
Okay.
And then melted down 100% or bittersweet chocolate.
Okay. Melted. And,
mm-hmm. And then
tempered or just melted?
Just melted. Just
okay.
melted.
There we go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I add the flour and
with the spices, baking
with the
ancho
and spices. Yes.
Because that's where that's where that's put together, though,
yes,
on the side.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then I add that in. And then I add chopped chocolate chips.
Oh.
And then after, and then if you can, you want cookie dough to be a bit chilled when you bake
it. Okay.
And then I just scoop them out into balls and then drop them in granulated sugar and bake them. And then I add a little pinch of salt when they come out.
Oh,
there's
a little,
already salt in it, but.
But just a little bit of pinch to do a salt sweet thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's also got the ancho and the cayenne.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got a little bit of a kick. So, but the chocolate chips and the melted chocolate are worked into the dough as well.
Yes. So.
But the chips are big enough to, you can see them, but the melted chocolate is just in there?
It's just in there, and that's the bitter chocolate. There's not a lot of it.
Okay.
It's just to give it a certain consistency and a level of bitterness.
Do you like dark chocolate or milk better for baking?
Dark. Well,
okay.
I mean, I don't hate milk chocolate. Yeah. I don't even hate white chocolate, but if you get, some people get real pretentious about it because technically it's not chocolate if it's white chocolate. Because so what it is it's cocoa mass versus cocoa butter, cocoa fats.
Okay.
So white chocolate, there's no actual cocoa mass.
Okay.
And the cacao bean or anything.
Okay.
That's why it's
just
completely white.
It's just a second. It's a byproduct of it. The cocoa.
Yeah. It's the butter from it. It's the
okay.
fats.
Okay.
And then chocolate that is completely bitter. You call that 100% because
yeah.
it's 100% of the cocoa mass. And then bit sort of, like the semi-sweet chocolate, most people call it semi-sweet.
Yeah.
That's usually, if you ever see a chocolate bar that says 60%,
yep.
that's semi-sweet.
Okay.
And then the milk chocolate is usually 40.
Okay. And so the darkness of the chocolate is just how much of the cocoa bean is in it.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's the cocoa mass to the
ratio. Just the fat. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And do I feel like I saw the creation of chocolate in some documentary, but are they adding sugar to the cocoa bean? Probably, right? Otherwise,
for the actual process of just me, I mean, it depends on the finished product if they choose to
right,
add
like a Snickers bar has got just a boat ton of sugar and corn syrup in it.
Yeah,
probably.
There's not a lot of real cocoa mass in that. There's very little, and there's a lot of the soy lectin or whatever it is, the emulsifier in there. And
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
There aren't a lot of, if I remember, you know, most of the big name brands in the US are not really good quality chocolate.
Right. Okay.
So,
but with the cookies, I like that you've, there's
I will
melted
say that
chocolate.
The main yeah? recipe is not mine.
No.
I've tweaked it, but so I got the idea from, there's a pastry chef named Jacques Torres.
Okay.
Who I love. I've never met him, but, it was one of his recipes in one of his books.
And they're delicious.
They're delicious. I love them.
And you love so. Them. And you make them regularly. And then the other one you make is just a basic sort of chocolate chip.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I
All
love
right.
those.
Then let's talk about croissants, because I actually, my mother-in-law, who has recently passed away,
yeah.
Introduced me Sorry. To this item, which is a, it's a muffin splitter.
Oh,
because
I've never seen that.
Taught me how to make English muffins.
I saw you post something on Instagram. You recently
right.
baked
when,
some,
right?
Right,
because she had sourdough starter, and so we had to bake every 2 weeks, and I am not a baker. I don't like baking. You know what I like? My mother-in-law. So we baked because I liked her.
Yeah.
And so, but now that I know how to make English muffins, I'm kind of like, oh, well, they're not that hard. So talk to me about croissants. This was this, by the way, was the bread, the book that has it. That has
oh, cool.
this, it's like a sourdough.
I don't know if I've ever made English muffins. That's. Oh, I love
nope.
English muffins.
These are oh. sourdough English muffins, and
okay.
it's a half a cup of starter, a cup of milk, 2 3/4 cups of unsifted regular all-purpose flour, a tablespoon of sugar, 3/4 teaspoon of salt, half a teaspoon of soda, and about 3 tablespoons of cornmeal, and that's just for the outside. And
mm-hmm.
then she added, because over the decades of making this, she added a teaspoon of baking powder. So. In addition
cool.
to the baking soda, there was a half a teaspoon of baking soda. She added a teaspoon of baking powder. And it just makes them rise.
And I don't
more.
Know if you know this already, and I can't remember which is which, but I believe the difference between the two is that one is activated by heat, the other one is activated by heat and moisture.
Oh. That's
so
I did
know.
Not know that. That's interesting. I wonder, I know that she was just constantly kind of trying to figure out how to make things. That's what I think bakers do. It's like us. They're like chemists. They're mm-hmm. science. It's more sciencey. And there's an amazing cranberry Christmas cake that I love.
Ooh.
That she was always talking about putting blueberries in, and I was like, not broken. No need.
No need to
fuck with it. It's yeah. delicious. And leave it alone. So she was like, but what if blueberries? And I'm like, and I like blueberries, but guess what? How many things have cranberries in them? Not that many.
That's true. That. Yeah.
Go, let's leave it go alone. Make something with blueberries. You knock yourself out. Anyway. So how do you make croissants?
I haven't made them in a little while, but so it's, you just, you first activate the yeast. You have a little thing on the side with some yeast that you activate with
a little warm water,
a little bit of warm water, right?
Yeast powder.
Mm-hmm. And then it's just flour. And
eventually you add the sourdough.
Excuse me.
People make sourdough croissants? That'd be weird, right?
I could see that having a good flavor. I wonder if the sourdough would be too dense or heavy. Maybe.
Yeah,
it
might be because the croissants are. I've eaten more croissants recently because I read a mystery novel where one of the main characters would always have a cappuccino with a croissant around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was like, I want to be that guy.
That sounds lovely. Let's do that. Yeah.
I'm going to do that.
That's so great. Where are you getting your croissants from?
Well, if it's good, I get them in a nice bakery right here in Los Angeles. There's a couple of places that make their own.
Cool.
And if it's bad, I just want to somehow cosplay eating a croissant with, then I just go to Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf for Starbucks.
Yeah, so just grab what's there. So yeah, I hear you. Yeah. So what were we just talking about? How to make them?
Yeah.
So we have the yeast and the flour, and then you combine that, and it's you have that in the mixer with the dough hook going for a bit, and then you have that set aside while and let it rise, and then
do you have to proof it? Is that
what's eventually? Yes.
Okay.
So that's the thing. So the making it there aren't a lot of ingredients in putting it together. It's just eventually there are steps. There's you do this to it and now you wait. And then you do this to it and now you wait. And then you do this to this and you wait. And then you shape it and then you wait and then you bake it.
Oh wow.
Sort of.
So there's a little fiddle and diddle of the waiting.
And maybe I've made mistakes and things I've talked about with you. So everybody, but whatever.
Feel free to look up a recipe. You're doing great, everybody. You're doing great. By the way, I am talking with Dale Dunlap, and Dale Dunlap DC is her Instagram. And go check that out. Very funny. Worked with her. And we're talking desserts and chocolate.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. I'm excited. So, okay. So you put the flour, salt, yeast together, plop it in a bowl after it's been mixed to how you want it and you knead it how you want it. You throw it in a bowl and you set it aside for it to rise.
Okay.
Like double in size, basically. You should also, over on the, separately, have a bunch of butter, which you have pounded into like a square, maybe depending on how many croissants you're making, you know what I mean?
Right.
But you pound it into a square with some flour, not a specific amount of flour, just enough to where you can,
Oh, so you can touch it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then you put that in the fridge to keep it real cold while your dough is busy doubling in size.
So that's the first time you wait.
Correct.
Okay.
So then the dough doubles, you punch it down, and I don't think you need it at all after that. I don't remember if you wait again, but then eventually you take the dough again, you roll it out, you take the butter and you've rolled out the dough flat, you put the butter in the dough and then you kind of like envelope it
in the middle of the dough and then you fold it over.
Right. And then you roll it and then you let it rest again and then you take it out of the fridge and you roll out the dough and then you fold it again and then you put it in the refrigerator, you let it rest and then you fold it. So you're creating all these layers of dough and butter, these flaky layers. That's what you're doing.
Okay. So the first time you do it, you make the dough, you go, you let it double in size, you punch it down. Maybe you let it rise again. Can't remember. Doesn't matter. Yeah, whatever.
I could grab the recipe I use right now, but
no, it could happen, but not.
Yeah.
But let me just see if I'm getting this right.
Okay.
You bring the dough once it's ready to start working it again, and you essentially roll it flat, and you take that square of butter that you've, and it's super cold, and then you fold it so it's an envelope, kind of thing. And you do a trifold. I remember distinctly I used to stuff envelopes for a living. And right. And then where do you put, now, are you putting that to rise again, or are you putting that to chill again?
So, yeah, I think at this point there's no more rising until you shape and you're going to proof.
Okay.
So at this point,
so you put it in the fridge to to chill again, essentially. And then after a certain amount of time, you take it out. Are you getting another stick of butter?
No, that's a good question. Okay. So what you're doing, so that first time you wrap it in, so you've got now dough surrounding the butter.
Yeah.
I can't remember if you roll it out and fold it for the first time. My friends are going to give me a hard time, but I'm still friends with who do this for a living. But you put it in the fridge, you wait for a bit, you take it out, and then you roll it out again. And as you do that, the butter is now kind of spreading out with the dough,
right,
and being incorporated, and then you fold it again
to make
another
layer.
It's no longer one block of butter. It's a bit more incorporated into the dough. But it's important. The reason you have to do this and then put it back in the refrigerator is because you want the butter to stay cold enough to where, when you bake it, obviously it melts at some point, right? But if it's already kind of melted out before it bakes quickly enough, then it doesn't really create the flaky layers. You need to have the dough, butter, like these flaky layers.
Right.
So
right.
You roll it, you fold it, you chill it for a few hours. Then you repeat that process a couple of times. A
couple of times. And then when you're done with fiddle and diddle with the butter and you're finally going to make croissants, you just roll it out, cut them, and then
roll and you them, shape into, them
into tiny pointy things that are right.
Exactly.
And then you put
and
them on a cookie sheet.
Some of them I like to put chocolate in, of course. I do.
Oh, right.
I usually do half regular butter croissants, and then the other half I do chocolate.
Okay. And that's when you're just, and are you putting melted chocolate in it, or is it?
No.
More like a chocolate chippy kind of.
Just like a chocolate chip. Yeah. If I'm making them real small ones. So you'll, for the, you know, the classic looking croissants, you cut a weird sort of triangle, and then you kind of stretch it a certain amount, a certain way, and then you roll it, and then you fold the little guys. And
together.
With the chocolate, you just cut a rectangle, and then you just put a little bit of chocolate on one end and you roll it, and that's it.
Okay. And then it just puffs into sort of a rectangle.
Correct.
Got it.
Correct.
And then, so then now let's say you have a dozen or 18, whatever, croissants, you have a large baking sheet. Are you lining it with parchment paper, or is it going in? Okay. And
so,
then you're putting
so at
them
this
on
point,
the thing. Yeah.
So at this point, so we've taken it out. We have our cookie sheets ready. Because once you start to proof them, that's where you're not moving them anymore.
Okay.
So you gotta cut them, shape them, place them how you want them to be placed when they go in the oven.
Right. So no more moving them around.
Correct.
Okay.
So you place them on the parchment on the cookie sheet, and then you proof them.
And
so,
to proof them, here's something that's on the Great British Bake Off that you've never seen. They have something called a proofing drawer.
Yes.
Which
so that is the thing that is, it's tricky. You got to get used to it at home, because if you do it professionally, you're used to having a proof box or a proof drawer or a proof cabinet or whatever, and it's held, you know, at a perfect temperature. So proofing, you want it to be warm enough to activate the yeast again.
Yeah.
But not so warm that all the butter melts out.
Right.
It's
right. So not 98.6.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
And so you, there's tricks that you can do. So sometimes you can put it into an oven that is turned off, and you can put like a frying pan filled with hot water in there with you, and the steam from the pan will sometimes be enough. Sometimes that's too hot though, depending on how hot the water is, how small is your oven, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What I've done, I've created just weird little, I have pictures of like this, my ex sister-in-law one time when we were making croissants together. What I did was I took a bunch of tin foil. How do I explain this? So imagine your stove, your stove top, right? So I made this like tent that went from the front of the stove up to like the wall.
Oh, so you could then crack the stove?
Yeah, sort of. Exactly. You didn't even crack the stove, because you know how when you have your oven on, heat comes a little bit from the back?
Right, it comes from the back. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I just sort of trapped.
Oh, you made a little hood.
There.
A little hood of tinfoil.
Yeah.
So it was just sort of the right temperature. Okay.
Yeah. And sometimes you can also just put the tray on top of your refrigerator. Sometimes that's warm enough.
That's what I've done, because heat rises. Mm-hmm. So when I make any sort of bread, I just put it on top of the fridge.
That's cool.
Yeah. Or if I've actually baked something and the stove is cooled down but not cold.
Right.
I'll put it on the stove. So that'll
And then
sometimes,
once they proof, if they should double in size.
Again, doubling.
And then you and then you brush them with like an egg yolk wash.
Okay.
And that gives them the nice sort of dark sheen.
Yep.
And then you bake them.
And then you get yourself a cappuccino and you enjoy a chocolate croissant.
Yep. It's the best.
It sounds amazing, quite honestly. What about now? And here's something. It was just Andy's birthday. His favorite thing is a Boston cream pie, which, the way, is not a pie. It's a cake.
Okay, yeah.
It looks like a cake.
I agree.
I could not find a Boston cream pie anywhere. We drove down to Long Beach and had Boston cream pie, which was
cake. You're too far from Boston, I guess.
I guess we're too far.
In LA.
Well, we could also go to the Dunkin' Donuts on the corner and get the Boston cream pie donut,
mm-hmm.
Which is also not what I, you know, that's not a birthday thing.
Right.
I want it to be something real. And so in the world of cakes and pies, do you have a favorite?
Cakes and pies. I do.
I like pie better than cake usually, but.
Yeah. Most people I know, I think a lot of people I know like pies more. I think I lean towards cake more often.
Interesting. Interesting.
I really like, but I don't like choosing.
It depends
on my mood. But if I have to choose cake or pie,
mm-hmm.
I think I would choose cake.
And what is your favorite cake? Do you have good cakes that you like? Like if you're out, it's sort of like ordering a pizza, a pan-sized pizza.
Mm-hmm.
You can get anything on a pan-sized pizza, and then that's your pizza. But when you order pizza with friends, you have to compromise.
That's true. You know, I'm wondering now, because now I'm imagining being at a restaurant or being out somewhere. Do I normally go for the pie? Now I'm thinking, I don't know.
Right.
Well, I will say, okay, very basic thing, like chocolate. I like chocolate cake. I like chocolate cake a lot. With the, you know, a raspberry, some sort of acidic, nice fruit going with that. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different things out there though. It's hard to to pick.
Wait,
pies.
Different
like
kinds of cake?
The different kinds of cake, different kinds of pies. I like pies that, some fruit pies I like. I tend to like more custard type pies.
Oh.
I also like pecan pie.
Andy loves a pecan pie. That's his favorite. I like a pumpkin pie.
Mm-hmm. I like pumpkin pie also.
Yeah.
People have been really shitting on pumpkin pie lately, and that's fine. Whatever. You don't have to like it. I'm going to eat it anyway.
Right. He likes a sweet potato pie, which is a little more savory. Mm-hmm. And I have recently embraced a cherry pie. That's one of my favorites.
One of my mom's favorites. She loves a cherry pie.
Good work is being done with cherries and pastry.
Yeah.
I'll do a cherry pastry too with cream cheese, dressing wise or icing wise. Where do you stand? Buttercream or cream cheese?
Okay. I mean, cream cheese icing is amazing on like pumpkin cake or, whatever. I could just sit and eat that by the spoonful, but I love buttercream. I do. This gets into, I guess, being a little snooty again or something. There's a certain buttercream that we learned how to make in school, and it's a little more stable. There's a lot of butter in it, but there's also egg whites in it. But you cook it. It's very smooth. It's very thick. But that buttercream
is
the best buttercream that I've had.
It has a lot of butter.
It's like the amount that usually, if I remember correctly, it's like 20 ounces of butter, 20 ounces of sugar, and 6 egg whites.
Wow.
So what you're making a meringue and then adding the butter. But so there's 3 different types of these meringues. So there's French meringue, which is what most people think of when they think of meringue. You take the egg whites, you whip it, you add the sugar, you whip it, boom, you're done.
Okay.
And that's the least stable because you could just knock it down very easily, right?
Okay.
Then there's Swiss meringue where it's all the same steps. You take the egg whites, you whip it, you add the sugar. But with the Swiss meringue, you're doing that, but you're doing it over a steam bath. You're doing it over like a pot of steam.
Okay.
Yeah, to cook it to a certain temperature. And it makes it a little more stable, a little bit smoother. And usually it's a nice thing to use on top of like a lemon meringue you torch it. If you ever have a meringue pie and you're like, this one's much smoother than the one I had at this other place where it's just all kind of air bubbles or whatever.
Right.
It's because that one cooked the meringue as they made it.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
Now the Italian meringue, which is making the buttercream I'm talking about, is the most stable. And what you do is you cook the sugar on the stove as, you're making bubbling cooking sugar as though the kind of thing that when you're about to make a sculpture, like it's boiling.
Yeah.
And
so you boil sugar.
You boil sugar. And in your mixing bowl, you have the egg whites beating. The thing that's tricky about making Italian meringue is that you have to time it perfectly because when the sugar is ready to be used, you have to use it. You can't just turn off the stove and then let it sit and wait for the eggs.
Right.
And when the eggs are ready, you have to add the sugar. You can't just turn off the mixer and have the egg whites sitting and waiting for the sugar because the sugar will overcook and then you can't use it. And then the egg whites will just collapse. And then you can't use it.
Okay. And then you can't use it.
So you time it and then you really, really, really slowly add this boiling hot sugar to the egg whites because you can't scramble it.
Right.
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 And then if you do it right, it kind of fills up the whole mixing bowl.
With meringue.
Trying to not burp into the microphone.
I appreciate it.
Very classy. And so you let it mix. And then when it's not extremely hot, it's still going to be pretty hot.
Yeah.
You start adding all the butter to it a little bit at a time. Just chunks of butter, soft chunks of butter. And you're throwing the butter in. You're like, Jesus Christ, it's a lot of butter. But you're just adding the butter. And then
you
let the stove
Italian
hit it, and that's
meringue,
it.
And then you add the butter. And that is the greatest of all buttercream icings?
Yep, and then that's what I like to use on cakes when I can.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet
really
you do.
Good. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? Holy smokes, that sounds amazing.
And then it's also a good idea to add vanilla, you know, at the end of it. Maybe a pinch of salt or whatever, just to, you know.
Just a little dash of vanilla and a little pinch of salt.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing, just to the umami. Balance. Yes. Which is a meat thing, I think, actually.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
And then you add the meat. Mm-hmm. Did you ever see that episode of Friends where Joey eats the trifle and shepherd's pie that Rachel accidentally cooked them together?
Yep.
And he was like, it's got everything I wanted.
Yeah. He's like, it's not bad.
I'll eat this. And Maria actually is doing a joke. Bamford is doing a joke about how she wants to do a cooking show with her husband called Don't Throw That Away. And she's like, we'll eat that.
That's really smart. Yeah, no waste. My good friend Joey Friedman, she's a really funny comedian in DC area. Maria Bamford is her favorite. Like,
she's the best.
And my boyfriend Yusuf, well, he also loves Maria Bamford. I mean, who doesn't love her? She's
right. Awesome. Comedy, of course, subjective, and people who don't know anything about comedy sometimes are like, "Well, that's not what I pictured." So, and you're like, "Well, you shouldn't have pictured anything. You should have just come to the show,
yeah,
or enjoyed it. You should have YouTube Googled to find out what you were going to see, because then you would have really pictured it and said, "Oh, that's not what I want." So,
but so they're working, they're going to do that. Hey, don't throw that away.
No, that's just a joke.
This is just
idea.
A joke that she has
that I think they should actually do.
I'd watch it. I would definitely watch that.
Why not?
That's a great idea.
Maria's actually been learning how to actually cook in the last 3 or 4 years. She kind of didn't care. And then she was like, oh, but what if I do follow the thing? It turns out it all works out. And then it's all much more edible.
And then you get a little less intimidated probably, and you start doing it more.
Right. And you could do other things and more. So
you cook a lot, right?
I do cook a lot.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Go ahead, please.
Well, I was gonna say I remember a while ago I listened to one of these that Tom Papa was on.
Right.
And he was obviously talking about baking bread, but you also talked about some of the things that you like to cook, and you did a lot of cooking, it sounded like.
Right. I like chicken bread, which is where I take a loaf of bread that it's a couple of days, just getting stale or whatever. And I like to bake a chicken on top of it. And then what you have is a schmaltzy bunch of bread that then you eat all of that.
That sounds
and you're not
delicious.
Hungry for chicken. It is genuinely delicious. I'm actually going to make a beef stew today.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. I like beef stew. And I haven't made it in a couple of years. And now's the time.
I haven't made it this year. I made it last year. Do you throw in peas at the end? I know sometimes I've done that. Sometimes I haven't. People feel pretty strongly about it. So
people can feel strongly about a frozen pea in, I think Andy would probably like it. I don't think I have done it, but there's nothing wrong. It's a nice bright color.
Yeah. I think you know, that's kind of more what it is, just breaking it up a little bit. But
if you like peas, you it's a win-win.
Yeah.
And if you don't like peas, it can ruin your beef stew. Yeah. So what I do
I think
is
if it was for a group of people, I wouldn't do it because it's such a risk.
And, well, I do like to use Guinness, which is like a stout base to it. And I don't drink or anything. But once you've made beef stew, there's not a lot of alcohol left after the 2.5 hours of making beef stew.
True.
You're fine. It adds just another layer.
I might try that next time. I'll put red wine.
Right. That's also good. And sherry, sometimes a dry sherry.
Nice.
Just a couple of teaspoons of that. But who's got that sitting around?
I do not.
Every 9 months, we'll drink a beer. And so we have like a 6-pack of Guinness bottles that are growing old in our garage refrigerator.
Yeah, you got to put those in the stew for sure.
Yeah. Now's the time. No reason to hold
really
back.
And then you got to have bread with the stew too for sopping.
Right. Could have bread.
My favorite thing is sopping. Things you can eat that you can sop with.
Yeah. They're the best. I love like a dippy egg. It's always good with toast. Good times.
Yeah.
What did I have for breakfast? Why am I talking about other foods? I think, oh, I know. I had yogurt and blueberries. So
I had an everything bagel and cream cheese.
Oh, delicious. Have you ever made a bagel?
No. No, I haven't.
Yeah. Because they're,
I used to work at a bagel place a long time ago, but I was just, you know, the kid at the counter.
Right, you know, right. Yeah, yeah.
Cutting the bagels and putting the whatever on
for
people. Yeah.
Yeah. Hooking people up with an actual bagel.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll go buy bagels. There's a bagel place, right? There's a bagel factory right by us called Western Bagel. Mm-hmm. They're open 24 hours and they're always making new bagels. Ooh. I might actually go get bagels for lunch and make the stew later. Nice. Guys, ladies and gentlemen, it's been an hour. I can't even express to you how fast the hour has gone. Is there anything you want to tell me, Dale Dunlap, about baking that we did not cover?
Or I don't desserts? Really think, I think that one thing I would like to tell people is that it is not, yes, it is more scientific than cooking or whatever, but honestly, once you sort of learn the basics of things, it's not as specific as people make it out to be. Don't worry about, oh, if you mess up a measurement, the whole thing's going to be ruined. It's not. It just means if you added maybe a little too much wet, then just add a little bit more dry and you're going to be fine. It really is okay. I've made cookies without a recipe really stoned before and not really, and it worked out fine.
Just turns out people ate them. And it's true. Like if you want, like I saw some TV show where it was like, you should always measure your, and you should weigh your ingredients and not measure them.
Yes.
And you're like, that's fine. But if you measure them and bake cookies, people will eat cookies. So
yeah, exactly. Like, yes, I absolutely, if you have the choice and you have the time, weigh your ingredients. It is much better. And if you can weigh them via grams and not ounces, whatever. But it's going to be fine if you don't weigh. I don't always weigh it.
Right.
And sometimes when I need 3/4 of a cup of flour, I use my cup measure and I look and I say, that's about 3/4 and I dump it in. It's fine. It's not.
Right. Right. So don't be afraid to try. And
then
if you get totally into it, enjoy that too.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you want to get yourself a scale and, you know, start measuring.
One more thing.
Yeah.
Sorry about chocolate. So if you want to start trying like better chocolate.
Yeah.
A good indication is on the label. If there's a percentage somewhere, that means it's less likely it doesn't have, like, you, if you look at the ingredients and it says like soy, lectin, emulsifier, whatever.
Right.
You kind of want to steer clear of that. Get a chocolate that has a percentage on the label because that's a bit more
pure. That means it won't have as much of it or any of it, maybe.
Right.
Nice tip.
Just look for the percentage number.
I love that. Yeah. That's awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
Rangers, know in your hearts that you can go see Dale Dunlap do stand-up comedy if you are in our nation's capital. And if you happen to see a bad guy, punch him in the nose. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Poke him right in the nose. Why not? And Dale Dunlap, DC, is the handle. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Jackie. This is so fun.
Yay. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
Hi, Adal. How was the show?
Well, it was fun. It was about baking. And it was with I worked with this woman in Washington, D.C. a couple of months ago at the D.C. Loft. And her name is Dale Dunlap. And Dunlap. And it's Dale Dunlap, D.C. is her handle on Instagram. And she went to culinary school for pastry to be a pastry chef.
That's exciting.
Loves desserts. I know. And then decided she didn't like the grind and then started doing stand-up. So has a different day job. And
different grind altogether.
Different grind entirely, but also a grind. Likes to make cookies. I got a little bit of insight into different kinds of pastries.
Ooh.
And she was telling, I wanted to tell you about this though.
Mm.
She was talking about her favorite buttercream icing.
Oh, okay.
Now, you are
not a big fan of buttercream icing, but I'm willing to explore alternatives.
She said that it is buttercream ice, buttercream icing made with Italian meringue.
Oh.
So you make an Italian meringue and then you add the butter.
Oh, okay.
So it is super duper rich.
Well, I mean, is it sort of fluffy like a meringue?
It starts out fluffy like a meringue, and then there's a lot of, and so it's,
and it gets beat down, I guess.
It's taller than regular cream cheese icing.
All right.
So there is still some height there, but it's, they've got egg whites and meringue.
Well, that sounds amazing.
Right. And
the online recorder hit a snag here, so we're going to skip ahead to when it started working again.
Well, it was a great episode, Andy.
The buttercream.
It's just really good. I guess you got to make, the timing is important. You got to make sure that the meringue is done the same time the egg whites are done. And
Well, that meringue is the egg whites.
The chocolate. Wait,
the chocolate. Okay.
Maybe the chocolate, or maybe there was something, the butter, the meringue. It was a fiddle and diddle moment that,
we'll have to listen to the episode to find out.
You got to cook the sugar and the egg whites.
Right. By the way, you're using the back of one of my prototype pages.
We got scratch paper. We got scratch paper around the house.
We do.
So it was a great episode. And this has been a less positive bonus episode.
A little bit of a mess, but a little technical difficulties, but we're through it now. We're good.
We're good. So, Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?